Be seated. I was gifted with a book by writer Phil Calloway, who has a great knack for using humor to talk about life. He has this book called Tricks My Dog Taught Me About Life, Love, and God. He recounts a time in his life when his kids and his wife convinced him that the family should include a dog. At first, he wasn't so convinced that this was a good idea. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, he was outvoted. I'm going to share one of his chapters from that book with you this morning, but first I'll set the scene. Phil and his wife are just cleaning up from a dinner party that they've hosted at their home. And Phil has eaten 3 slices of cheesecake, which isn't a great idea for anyone, let alone a person who's just coming down with the flu. Yeah. His family has only had the new pet dog for a few days, and they've made a cozy corner in the ensuite bathroom, complete with newspaper on the floor, as the dog gets used to his new home. "Maybe I'm allergic to the dog," I said to no one, as I knelt before an ice cream bucket, cradling it, groaning sick as I'd ever been. It was the middle of the night, and I lifted my blurry eyes from the bucket. My wife's slippers came into view. I do not suffer infirmity well, so she must have been awakened by my groaning. "Sorry, honey, you'll be okay." And the slippers disappeared. I couldn't blame her. Fatigue from running our little asylum was understandable. But some sympathy would have been nice. The majority of the next hour I spent alone in the bathroom, acquainting myself with that bucket, wishing that the cheesecake was back in the pan. Thankful that we had coated the floor with newspaper. I shouldn't say alone, however. During that woeful hour, only one living creature paid me any notice. A furry little 6-inch dog stayed by my side. And when at last I crawled out to the sofa and laid my head to rest, I heard a noise and saw 2 tiny paws reaching up at me, clawing the sofa. "Mojo," I groaned. The scratching was joined by a soft whimper, so I managed to scoop her up with one hand and plunk her down by my knees. She let out a soft yip and slowly slithered upwards onto my chest. "I'm so sick," I moaned. "I think I'm going to die. You don't want to be anywhere near me." But she did. She lay there listening to the magnitude of my complaints, the gravity of my circumstances. Her breath came in short bursts, but she stayed put. And when I awoke to watch the earliest rays of sun paint our wall in crimson with gold tassels, she was still lying there, looking at me as if to say, "You big baby, stop complaining. You'll be fine." But I wasn't fine. That entire day, I barely moved from the couch. Nor did she. I ate a solitary piece of toast with butter. Mojo helped me. I fell asleep. So did the dog. I almost wished she would piddle or tear apart a pillow so I could have an excuse not to like her. But she lay there, as close to my chest as she could get. I didn't push her away, as I thought I would. Every hour, Ramona took her outside and then put her back at my feet. She slithered higher. Dad knocked on the door just after lunch to visit me in my misery. "How are you doing?" "Horrible," I replied. He was intrigued by the new dog. "Hello," he said, patting her head. That was the extent of it. He stayed long enough to tell me how much they enjoyed living in our suite and what an answer to prayer it had been. There were tears in his eyes. "Get some rest," he said softly, and he closed the door. Moments later, Mom dropped by. "So cute," she said. "Thanks." She smiled, "You too." "But the dog, he's adorable." "She," I corrected. "He's a she." "Oh." She scratched the pup's chin and began talking to her in baby talk. I couldn't believe it. My own mother. Registering more concern for the dog than for, in fact, that I was likely going to die within hours. Surely the kids would show some sympathy. "Come," I groaned when they arrived home from school. "I'm about to die. It's time to divide the spoils." Completely ignoring me, they grabbed a few cookies, cooed, cuddled, and cradled the pup, and then scooped her up and left to show their friends. At dinner time, I summoned the energy to reach for the remote and watch some baseball. Toronto's Blue Jays were losing to someone. And Ramona brought a fresh muffin in hopes that it would soothe my stomach. I ate most of it and lay the muffin wrapper beside me. A few pitches later, I looked down to discover that the muffin wrapper had vanished. "Hey," I said. Mojo had crumbs around her mouth. She was guilty as a 4-year-old caught in a lie. "No," I commanded, aware that her cheeks were swollen chipmunk-like. Reaching toward her, I attempted to open her tiny mouth and spare her irritable wrapper syndrome. She snarled and snapped at my hand. The kind of playful animal had become a monster. "No," I repeated, reaching toward her again, more snarling and snapping. I calmly repeated my command. "You will never be in charge," I said lightly, tapping her nose. To paraphrase my mother, "I brought you into this house, I can take you out of it." A dog needs affection, food, and exercise, an underrated virtue called discipline, too. Mojo closed her eyes and allowed me to fish around and pull from her mouth and throat a sizable wad of pasty muffin wrapper covered in goop. She would never snap at me again, nor would I ever tap her wet nose again. As darkness descended, I no longer felt like death was about to visit. I carried the dog with me into the bedroom, thinking to myself, "She's learned a few things. But I have too." I spent the day in the company of the world's best psychiatrist, one who sits by my couch and says, "I think you're wonderful." So like my dog, I need to stop whining, listen up, and just be there. "You can't put her there," said Ramona, pointing to the bed and then nodding towards the bathroom. "I put the papers down." "Sleep tight," I said as I pushed my furry little friend through the bathroom door. She spun around and looked up at me hopefully. "Nope," I said, waggling my finger. "Be quiet. Go to sleep." And promptly at 1:45, she did. Tricks My Dog Taught Me About Life, Love, and God is a book that I'm guessing we can all relate to. A good friend of mine described her late dog as unconditional love on 4 furry legs. And after her dog passed away, it left a grief in their family that some find hard to understand, unless, of course, you've ever loved a pet. We talk about pets being masters of our pets, like we actually believe that we're somehow superior to our blessed animals that seem to understand a selfless kind of love that the Gospels tell us about in the stories of Jesus. stories that perplex us, challenge us, and stories that we can relate to only in our own need to be known and to be seen and to be loved so unconditionally. Pets have a lot to teach us about God's love. Churches across North America and in Europe commemorate the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi. He lived in the late 12th century and into the first quarter of the 13th century. He was born wealthy and was expected to take over the family business of selling silk. Being of the upper classes at the ages of 19 to 23, he also served as a soldier. And after a series of spiritual experiences, he began to follow Christ in a radical fashion by letting go of power and wealth and adopting a life of poverty and humility. This disarmingly simple life, grounded in the Gospels, and especially the Sermon on the Mount, attracted others to him. This was the beginning of the Minor Brothers, better known as the Franciscans. Francis supposedly talked to animals because he believed they were creatures of God like us. One day, while Francis was traveling with some companions, they happened upon a place in the road where birds filled the trees on either side. Francis told his companions, "Wait for me while I go preach to my sisters, the birds." The birds surrounded him, intrigued by the power of his voice, and not one of them flew away. That is St. Francis folklore. But St. Francis of Assisi is often portrayed with a bird, typically in his hand. Another story about Francis, we're not sure if it's true or not, but it goes like this. In the city of Gubbio, where Francis lived for some time, was a wolf, terrifying and ferocious, who devoured men as well as animals. Francis had compassion upon the townsfolk, and so he went up to the hills to find the wolf. Soon fear of the animal had caused all his companions to flee, though the saint pressed on. When he found the wolf, he made the sign of the cross and commanded the wolf to come to him and hurt no one. Miraculously, the wolf closed his jaws and laid down his head at Francis's feet. "Brother wolf, you do much harm in these parts, and you have done great evil," said Francis. "All these people accuse you and curse you. But, brother wolf, I would like to make peace between you and the people." Then Francis led the wolf into the town and, surrounded by the startled citizens, made a pact between them and the wolf. Because the wolf had done evil out of hunger, the townsfolk were to feed the wolf regularly. In return, the wolf would no longer prey upon them or their flocks. In this manner, Gubbio was freed from the menace of the predator. Francis even made a pact on behalf of the town dogs that they would not bother the wolf again. Finally, to show the townspeople that they would not be harmed, Francis blessed the wolf. Now, we don't know if these stories are true or not, and that is the beauty of folklore. And dogs are mentioned more than a dozen times in the Bible. Cats, not so much. Probably because little guys are associated with the Egyptians, the people who enslaved the Israelites. The Bible does mention big cats, including leopards and lions, in reference to the Lion of Judah, but the most obvious one is that one. The basic theological issue for many people would be whether or not we should bless animals at all, because after all, they already bless us with their presence and love. But some resolve this by remembering that we bless God, so it is right, and we should invite God's blessing on these creatures who are so much a part of our lives and indeed a part of creation as they reflect the Creator. So we might continue to catch glimpses of the divine in the animals of creation. May we continue to practice with our furry friends unconditional, humble love. And might we be grateful to God for the love that God continues to reveal as God's own presence in many places, in many faces, and in the animals of God's world. God's kingdom come. Amen.